And now, the Last Word on Habs podcast, brought to you by the Last Word on Sports Network. Let's start the show.
Welcome back to the Last Word on Habs podcast. I'm Connor LaPomme, and as always, I'm joined by Johannes Wilden. How's it going, Johannes?
Hey, Connor. How's it going? How are you holding up?
I'm holding up okay. I think it was a little bit, well, we'll get to it, but it was a depressing kind of week last week for the Canadians. How are you holding up?
I was pretty livid. I actually stayed up and watched these games. and so Wednesday and Friday, I was up till 2 a.m. and, or Thursday and Friday, I'm sorry. I was, well, I guess, yeah, I don't know. The time change has me confused, okay? Let's just deal with it. I don't understand why we're still changing time. It's ridiculous.
Those farmers, they need their time changing.
The farmers.
I think that added to the general frustration I think a lot of Canadians fans felt was the fact that we stayed up. Like, I know I stayed up. I didn't watch the whole San Jose game. After the second period, I kind of knew it was done and dusted. And then Anaheim, the same thing, you know. But I was staying up to watch it, and it's tough when you have to wake up the next morning, especially, I mean, you know, when you have, you know, a 14-month-old who's got to get up and go to daycare. You know, it's not like I can, you know, sleeping in for me is, you know, 7 o'clock if I'm lucky, but it's like 6:10. So, you know, going to bed late, waking up early, getting him to daycare and then going to work, it's a whole thing in the morning. So, you know, I thought I'd treat myself because in the sound of, well, we'll get to it. But yeah, the frustration for me was I put in a bit of time, knew I'd be tired, and I didn't get really rewarded. So I was like extra salty, especially Friday night when I left to go to bed. I was quite salty.
Yeah, I was right there with you. I felt like we were kicked and we were down. And I've got a lot of hot takes about this trip. And I think people were legitimately asking whether this West Coast trip was the death knell for the Montreal Canadiens. And I'm starting to think it is. At this point, they have to win more than 70% of their remaining games, and that's tough enough for the team to do against a random sample of NHL teams. They've got a very hard row to hoe in the last month of the season. So I'm not feeling too good, Connor. I'm not feeling too good. Let's get into it though. Let's get into it. So Tuesday was great.
Yeah, they went into L.A. They took care of a team. They didn't, I wouldn't say they blew them out of the water, but they won the game 3-1. Special secret weapon Jordan Wheel came in and contributed, scored a goal. The road trip got off to a good start. They looked the better team in that game, and as they should, considering where L.A. is. I think they're at the bottom of the standings in the West, and so, you know, Montreal should be beating a team like that if they have serious playoff aspirations, which I think I'll get to later, but in this situation, they're kind of boxed into having them. So, yeah, it was a good way to start. I mean, I think a lot of people were a little I think the big takeaway was Jesperi Kotkaniemi being scratched. I think that was kind of the biggest storyline from the game. And, you know, I don't have much to say other than, you know, the Canadians came out and took care of business. They looked like the better team. And, you know, we've used the term on here a couple of times, a professional win. And I think that's kind of what it was, where they got up, I think, they got up by 2, and then they kind of were able to sort of salt the game away. You know, they were up 2-0, and then 3-1, and they were able to sort of just keep LA away and get out of there with the win.
Right? Yeah, agreed. Looked good. Jordan Wheel was a revelation, I thought. I was firmly in the camp of mocking the hero worship that was going on. There were some fantastic tweets with lots of hilarious puns on his last name, and I encourage fans to check out, you know, fire up the old tweet machine and have a look at some of those because they're pretty funny. But he looked absolutely fantastic, and I think gives an option now for that fourth line, which I think was losing speed, and to the extent that they want to sit Nate Thompson, they now have an option on the fourth line who's good in the faceoff dot and brings more offense and speed. So I thought that was great, and that boded really well for a very important week for Habs fans and for the team itself. Unfortunately,
you got to play the rest of the week.
The good times did not keep rolling.
No. Thursday night in San Jose. I don't know if you want to start with the lineup decisions first or the game. Well, I guess we'll go with the game. The Canadiens lost again in San Jose for the, 20th year running. I believe, they haven't won there since 1999, so it's the 20th year running. They lost 5-2. Although I would say the score isn't quite indicative of the game. I think Montreal probably played the best game of the road trip in this game.
Agreed.
They
might have played their best game in San Jose in 20 years.
Yeah, this week. And they were undone by Antti Niemi's goaltending. I think everyone realized Antti Niemi was going to get a start this week. I don't think many people were expecting it to be against the Sharks, considering the Sharks were clearly the better of the three California teams. So it was a little bit of a surprise. It was just too bad. They played very well. They deserved a better fate, but they had god-awful goaltending. We can get into, a bit more of the coaching. Again, Jesperi Kotkaniemi was held out of the lineup. Why, we don't know. I saw a lot of hot takes on there that people were kind of getting on Claude Julien for the way he kind of managed this trip. I don't know if we want to go down that road, but I mean, the game, like I said, after the second period, I think the Canadiens, when it was 3-2, I was like, maybe I'll stay up because, And then once it was 4-2, I said, yeah, they're done. It was just, another one of those back-breaking kind of games where they were in it. Although they got behind the eight ball early, they clawed back in it, and then it was just, snatched away from them right before, it was early in the third where they got the goal, and that's when I decided to pack it in. But anyway, how did you see the game? I know you stayed up to watch it like me and paid for it the next morning.
Right. I thought they looked really good. I thought they skated with them. I thought they created opportunities. They were obviously let down by their goaltender. I just think it's easy now with 2020 hindsight and all that stuff, but I just looking at it from a macro point of view, this is the game that they were going to play the best in because, number one, they've had 3 days to get over their jet lag, and the next game was going to be the next night, and they have that awful travel that you have to do to get from Central California down to Anaheim, and once it's passed, Pierre McGuire had a great sort of overview on this, but because they have noise restrictions, you can't fly right next to the rink. You got to fly to LA and then transit, which is, an hour and a half to get anywhere in LA. And so it's a miserable trip from Central California to Southern California, and they had just played the day before. And just thinking about it, the night that they had to play the best, the chances were they were going to play the best against the Sharks, and the vast majority of the players on the ice had come and played really, really well. They were let down by bad goaltending. And I think it was too cute by half to try to imagine that Niemi was going to magically find his game after looking really weak this season against his former team, and then set Price up to steal a game out of Anaheim and come out of there with 6 points. It was too cute by half. It was a mistake. In my view, you should have started Price against the Sharks. You should have faced this 20-year curse. And had we had a couple saves in the first half of the first period, I truly believe the Canadiens could have come out of that with at least a point and perhaps two. I think it was a mistake. And I think it speaks to a lack of confidence about this team. Now, we don't know what's going on with the flu there's information that we do not have about how players are feeling and all the rest of that stuff. But I thought it was a mistake to sit Kotkaniemi for two games in a row. I thought it was a mistake to start Niemi. I thought it was a mistake to allow the talk about the failure that Montreal's had in San Jose to get inside the head of the coach. The players responded. The coach, I think, laid an egg, a rare misstep in what I think has been a pretty good year for Claude Julien, but I think this was a mistake. And I think we have a bigger problem now about the goaltender position, because if Price can't be better than he was in Anaheim 7 out of the next 10 games, our season's over. And that is a hard thing to have to say right now after what has been a really delightful year. But I think mistakes were made. Okay. There's your podcast title. Mistakes were made, and sure. And there were a number of problems with that West Coast trip. Lineup, goaltender selection, and generally confidence. Not having confidence that the Habs could go in and play a very good San Jose Shark team, who, by the way, were missing some key players.
Yep. Yeah, there was no Carlson for San Jose, no Evander Kane, I believe. A couple of guys are also up in the air. I think they ended up playing. I can't remember who, but those are the two guys that didn't play. And, you know, it was just, I guess the bigger sign is, you know, if you want to try and do that, you know, put in Antti Niemi and be that cute, maybe he's got something in the tank against a team he used to play for, fine. But after those first two goals go in,
yeah,
I mean, you're fighting for a playoff spot. This is, you can't, you know, hope he finds it. He's shown you, you know, based on the balance of his performances this year, that, you know, he's letting in two garbage goals like that. You're probably better off getting him out of there and giving yourself a chance to even crawl back into the game, which they didn't do. And he kind of put up the, I wouldn't say the white flag, but he definitely sent a message after those two goals, saying, okay, no, Niemi, you keep going. And it kind of was the signal that, okay, this is what we have to deal with if you're the Canadians. And, you know, it was just too bad because, you know, on the other end, Martin Jones is, I think those two goals weren't, you know, he didn't let in two very good goals. You know, it was unfortunate the Canadians couldn't take more advantage of the fact that Martin Jones is having a bad night. And I think, you know, a pretty down season for him. It's just, yeah, it was just too bad. They got behind the eight ball, and it's become a bit of a trend, especially, lately they kind of get behind it a bit to start the game. So, it's, you know, in the Pittsburgh game last Saturday, they, you know, they were down 3-0 before the game was 10 minutes old, and it was sort of all she wrote. And, you know, the game in San Jose, same, they're down 2-0, and it's, you know, they need something. Something's got to give. They seem like they're not ready to play in these games for some reason, and for a team that is on the cusp of the playoffs, it's unacceptable. And you know, their poor performance, the poor result in San Jose seemed to carry over into their poor performance in Anaheim, where again, I mean, they got blown out of the water 8-2 by a team that is, you know, they should beat. Anaheim is, I think, just above Los Angeles in the Western Conference standings in the bottom, like they're the second worst team. And again, Montreal comes out and they're down 2-0 relatively quick. And, you know, the last two games, a little bit, the game in Anaheim more so reminded me again of a bit like last year, where, you know, despite, you know, in San Jose, despite the fact they played well, they were down quick. And, you know, they showed a bit of resolve coming back, which was good. But then in Anaheim, it just kind of all fell apart. And, you know, they were able to make it 2-1, and then it was 3-1, and then they made it 3-2, and then, you know, by the end of the second period, it was, I think, what, it was 5-2, and, you know, just forget it. And again, Carey Price was definitely not at his best, but I would also say the team in front of him was also definitely not at their best. They were giving up all kinds of chances. You know, again, lineup decisions no one understands. I mean, not that Brett Kulak coming in and out of the lineup is really should move the needle, but, you know, why was Brett Kulak taken out of the lineup? You know, I don't think he was any kind of reason for anything negative.
Well, that was Friday night, right? They took him out for the
Anaheim. Yeah, that's what I'm talking about, Anaheim. It just, you know, like, if you know, Niemi starting and no Cook and Niemi again against San Jose was a little puzzling, especially after you heard Cook and Niemi. They asked me, are you tired? And he said, well, the coach says I'm tired. He's like, I don't feel tired, but, you know. And a few things that kind of have started to get under my skin a little bit, like Claude Julien has been doing, you know, despite the fact that what's happening in the game, he doesn't seem to want to change certain things. Like, Habs are down 2-1 or 3-1 or whatever, and he's still rolling four lines. You know, like, I get that's what you want to do, but you also have to understand your situation. And your fourth line is probably not going to get you much in terms of offense, you know. Dale Weiss, Nate Thompson, and whoever, and our Trey Lekkonen, which is what it's usually been, or Jordan Wheel, if he, you know, but they're not, and I know Lekkonen finally scored a goal, you know, thankfully, but it's just, you're rolling these lines, and it's like, you know, you need to get in the game. You're giving this time to these guys who, you know, they've been okay, but they're not going to score you goals. They're not going to get you back in a game. And I just find he's kind of reverting a little bit to his older self. It just, don't know. It seems like they're playing. I don't know if it's me. Maybe it's just the bad result has left a really bad taste in my mouth. But it seems like he's trying to play more conservatively again. And that's not what this got this team to where they are. And it's a little frustrating and a little unsettling if this is what they're going to do, though, you know.
I agree. I totally agree. Yeah. I agree 100%. I think the thing that bothers me, though, is that they just didn't think about this game from a structural macro point of view. The San Jose game was the game that you want to win. Yeah. If you drop one against LA or Anaheim, you're not happy about it. But the San Jose one is the game you want to win because that sends the message that you can skate with the best teams. And the only way that gamble works is if they come out and blow Anaheim out of the water the next night. But for a variety of reasons, that was very unlikely to happen. It's going to be your third game in four nights, and then you have that make that horrible trip from Central California to Southern California, and you just put all your energy out in a losing effort against San Jose the night before. It was a failure of imagination. It was a failure to think through what was going to happen. And look, these things happen, and it's very easy to say, you know, a couple days later with the benefit of hindsight that it was an error. But I honestly think going into it, if you had asked me, I would have said, no, that's not right. You put all your eggs in the San Jose basket and you take what you take. But the goal has to be for this team to feel good about itself heading into the last month of the season. And instead, it has been the continuation of something that we've seen, unfortunately, too often the last month or so, of dropping big games when they can't, when they shouldn't. The game against San Jose was akin to a Saturday night game in Montreal. It was a game they had to win because of the psychology, but also because of the who San Jose is. And as I say, the only way this gamble pays off is if they play great against Anaheim, and they did not. And Price, that is too. You cannot let in 8 goals. I don't care how bad the team in front of you is. That's right. Unacceptable. And so here we are. The Canadiens are officially out of a playoff spot. I realize that it's all very, you know, touch and go and close, but unless we have a bubble team have some sort of epic failure, the money has to be on the Habs to miss the playoffs. And that is not, I mean, I don't care how bad Columbus is playing. We have a bad schedule, and this team has not shown the ability to be consistently good when they need to be to win enough games.
Yeah, I mean, it's especially down the stretch. I mean, if you really want to project ahead, I mean, their last 4 games of the season is Winnipeg, Tampa, Toronto, and Washington. So you're asking a lot if you want the Habs if they need to win all those games, it's going to be a lot. So I think the next 2 weeks here are pretty paramount. It's just too bad because, like, as I said, they kind of boxed themselves into this corner, right? I mean, it's nice to say they're doing a reset and this is all very positive. And it is. And I know we spoke about it last week, but, you know, you're at the point here where you're in a playoff bubble. You know, the reset, if you want to help yourself in a reset, rebuild, blah, 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 you need to pick high in the draft. Picking 15, okay, you can get lucky, but picking 15 is not the way to go. It's going to be a player that's not going to be developed for at least 3 years. You know, it's a player that you're not going to really be able to use anytime soon, and maybe not ever. And it's just frustrating because we kind of saw this, and I understand not wanting to sell the farm, but the Canadiens needed something else other than, and despite the fact Jordan Wheels looked very good, you needed something more than Jordan Wheel, Nate Thompson, and Dale Weiss.
Yes.
And, you know,
Keith Kincaid, Marcus Johansson, they could have been in on some bigger names. And yeah, nobody wants to give up. they could have done more, and they did, they didn't do more, and then now we're going to be in a position where, look, a picking in the latter half of the first round is the same as picking in the first half of the second round. There's not enough of a difference there. So if you're not tanking, then you've got to be building. And the Canadiens did not build in any meaningful way at the trade deadline and now are in danger of doing what the worst case scenario is. I don't know, man. So, but look, that's, I have a few specific questions I want to ask you about, about how things are shaken out from your point of view. But let's do winners and losers. It's kind of hard to pick one because there's a lot. But where do you want to start?
Sure, I'll start. And well, I'm sure it'll come to you, a surprise to you, that my loser of the week is Jonathan Drouin. And you know, we were talking about how these games were very big and important. And again, if he's going to be one of the top players, he did nothing this week in California. I think, what, maybe he had an assist. But again, I didn't like his game. Again, I find him trying to do too much all the time. You know, I was talking about it with some friends over the weekend. You know, and he reminds me, I don't know if you remember, not to the same level, but there was a guy who used to play on the Leafs, and he played on the Canadiens for a little bit too, named Sergei Berezin. And he used to get the puck in his own zone. The guy had great wheels. He would skate by everyone. He would skate so fast around the outside, but then he'd just end up behind the net of the other team and then lose the puck. And I find Jonathan Drouin does it. He gets the puck in his his defensive zone with a bit of speed, does his little dipsy doodle through the neutral zone, and then either loses the puck at the blue line or just goes behind the net and loses the puck, and then nothing comes of it. I feel like he still thinks he's playing junior, and it's frustrating to watch. And I get the point. You want to do something spectacular, but that's not the way to go about it. And again, we need more from him. I know he's points-wise, he's looked good, but we need to see more from him to be more assertive and dominant in games that actually mean something. They needed him to be dominant against San Jose. They needed him to pick up the slack against Anaheim. You know, there's big games he needs to show up. And, you know, fine, he had that little run there where in Edmonton where he had that, you know, that's a month ago, but you know, he looked good, but he can't have the games where he looks, he gets 9 points or 10 points in 3 games or 4 games, and then disappears for 2 weeks. That's not good. The Canadiens need, if he wants to be considered one of the better players in the NHL or one of the better players on the Canadiens, he can't disappear in big spots for the team, and that's what he's done, and he did it this week again, and it's just very frustrating, because if this is, I mean, I go back, how much... It's easy to go back, but again, talking about it with some friends on the weekend, you know, if you were to, would you rather have Sergachev or Drouin on the Canadiens right now? Like, I think out of all the trades, I think
Sergachev for sure.
That's the trade I want back. Because, okay, fine, I know Sergachev hasn't blossomed into this amazing defenseman yet, but I think what Sergachev would bring to the back end is way more than what Drouin is bringing to the forwards. And, you know, it's too bad. And I feel like I hate that I'm always picking on the same guy. And I know, to your point, you know, I could have picked any number of players, you know. But it's just Jonathan Drouin. He's the top line guy. He gets all these minutes, all these opportunities. Other players have roles diminished if they're not playing well. He still gets thrown out there all the time in all situations. And I don't necessarily think it's warranted. And, you know, it kind of bothers me to see him not get punished for the fact he makes stupid plays on the ice. You know, can be a little lackadaisical defensively. You know, all these other things people get kind of nailed for by a coach, and he kind of coasts by and nothing happens. So, you know, he needs to be better. The Canadiens need him to be better, and that's it. I mean, it's, you know, I feel like I've picked him every other week this year, but that's just how I feel.
Look, the problem I have with Drouin is that either he doesn't show up at all or he tries to do too much on every shift.
Yeah.
And I, for some reason, I think it has to come down to Julian finding the right line mate for him that does enough to – he can't be the only talent guy on a line. He's got to be with – like the Domi-Drouin lineup for a while looked really good because both of them have enough wheels that the other one could feed off and didn't feel like they had to do everything every time. And I don't know if there's got to be – I agree with you. He's 23. He has not figured out who he is as a hockey player yet. He has a lot of talent, but he also has a lot of bad habits. And the question – I mean, thank God he's not at center anymore. So let's – you know, th- thank God for small favors. But the next thing is to find what is the his line mates that over time will allow him to bring his best on a night-to-night basis. So I have no issue with you picking him. My loser of the week is Claude Julien, and I want to I just want to build this case in a couple of ways, because I don't want to be one of these. He made some bad decisions on the West Coast trip, but there are three problems that I have with Claude Julien right now. The first is the power play, which I feel like he has failed to solve. It is not acceptable.
They got a power play goal.
the power play is a problem and has been a problem, and this is not acceptable for Montreal Canadiens to have the league's worst power play. It is not acceptable, period. And look, we have provided a lot of suggestions about how to improve it. At the end of the day, Kirk Muller, I know, plays a role on figuring out special teams, and they've got Ducharme and a lot of other people who are contributing. But at the end of the day, Claude Julien has to figure out this problem and has to figure it out now. My second issue is something that you said earlier, which I agree with. When the going gets tough, Julien puts his head in the sand and he goes back to his old tried and true. And that is exactly the opposite of, as you correctly said, is what made the Canadiens so exciting this year to watch and what allowed them to win as many games as they did. This team is not constructed to be a defensive juggernaut. It's simply not. And so the reversion whenever times get tough to this sort of defense-first style is a mistake. And I think this goes along with this the Nate Thompson stuff, the Weiss stuff. It's not clear right now who this team is. They're having a lot more success when they had the young fast guys on the fourth line, when they were playing with pace every night. The final issue, I think, to me, which makes me select him, because those are two perennial issues, I think, that sort of confound individual weeks, but. The decisions he made to keep Kokkaniemi out, to start Niemi on Thursday, to take Kulak out, smack of desperation. And it does not look as part of a broader plan that gets this team to the playoffs. And if that's the goal, and I have to presume it is, you have to roll the dice in San Jose. You've got to bring your A game. Not only because you need the points, but because you need to know you need to tell your team that you believe the Canadiens at their best can beat one of the best teams in the West. And they didn't do that on Thursday, and I think it was a failure. The LA win notwithstanding, I think the West Coast trip was a failure. The Canadiens were not the best in the West, and they needed to be.
Yeah, I mean, you got blown out the last two games, what, 13-4. It doesn't matter what you do the first game, it looks terrible. I mean, the lasting memory of the trip is 8-2 to Anaheim, right? So, no matter what, despite the fact they won, it looked terrible. And, yeah, it was frustrating to watch a reversion. I think a lot of people were questioning the moves, not necessarily after the fact, but as they happened, as they were announced. People were kind of wondering what was going on. I mean, you know, there was rumor, or you know, teams have been dealing with the flu, so you don't know if guys were, you know, hit with the flu bug. People thought maybe Carey Price, part of the reason he didn't play in Anaheim in San Jose, because he had a bit of the flu. We don't know. No one said anything, so we're just gonna have to say this was their plan or whatever. It's frustrating to watch the conservative play creep in. It's tough to watch, you know, the fact that he wanted to build a fourth line that, you know, he rode so effectively in 2011 to a Stanley Cup, where he had a really strong fourth line. But he's also building a fourth line for 2011, and that's not how the game is played anymore. And, you know, there's a reason why the Sean Thorntons aren't in the NHL really anymore, or Gregory Campbell. And it's too bad, because I don't see a difference between Dale Weiss and Kenny Agostino. In fact, I like Kenny Agostino better in terms of what he brought and how he played. I mean, Nate Thompson, he's very good on the faceoffs, and he's smarter, but, you know, I don't think he brings that much more in terms of open ice play than Mikhail Chaput. And I'm not saying Chaput was great, but you know, to your point, they were more effective when they had these guys playing with speed. And sure, they weren't always great, but I don't know that they necessarily fixed the problem by making them a bit slower and a bit heavier. So that, and yeah, just sort of rolling, like I said, rolling the four lines when you need guys to go. I mean, there's nothing wrong with shortening your bench if you need a game and you need your offensive guys to get going. Yeah, the power play, we both went on it all season. I kind of quickly crunched the numbers, I think, last week or 2 weeks ago. You know, if the Canadians were an average power play now, because, you know, they're 30th or 31st right now. If they were even an average, I think they would have at least 10 more goals, which I know doesn't sound like a lot, but depending on when you get them, I think it was 10 or 11. Anyway, depending on when you get them, that could be the difference between, like, an extra 5, so let's say on the positive end, 5 to 10 points in the standings. And that makes a huge difference.
Massive. You know,
if they had an average power play right now, what, they have 79 points, I believe. So I was pulling it up. Yeah, 79 points. So now they have, let's say they get 5. I mean, they're comfortably in the wild card. You know, they're not quite near Toronto, but that's okay. You know, they would have 84 points. And right now that would, you know, they would be the first wild card.
So there's lots of intangibles there too, right? Because once you're scoring on the power play, teams have to play you differently. They're not going to play as physical. They're not going to try and take you out because they don't care if you get the power play. And as soon as you score a power play goal, that gives you a lift. That fills the team with confidence. It changes the intangible parts of the game that you can't really measure. So, you know, not having those points is bad. Not having the goals when you need them arguably is worse.
And I'm not even saying to make them a top 10 or top 2 power play, right? I'm talking about league average, 15, 16, in that area, you know? And that's the difference. And it's just very upsetting. Not upsetting, but it's, you know, if they could just figure it out, they would be such a dangerous team. And we wouldn't be sitting where we are now on this bubble team, and now everyone's really concerned because, as you pointed out, the schedule, not very kind down the stretch here. But before we, I guess, get to the schedule, I mean, we went right to losers because I think we were both very bitter about what we saw in California. We didn't really touch on winners, so we'll get to the winners this week. I'm going to go with Brendan Gallagher, tried and true. I mean, you can say guys didn't show up, but he's never one of them. He got a big goal in LA. He's got 30 goals on 2 years in a row now, even though he kind of stole it from Victor Mete, which, you know, God bless that kid. He's never going to score a goal, but... Gallagher, he had a couple of helpers too, even though in the games they lost to San Jose and Anaheim. He's just, again, you know, he's always, even when the team looks awful and terrible like they did at Anaheim, he's still out there trying to make things happen. It's not his, you know, it's not on him that the other players aren't kind of following or, you know, playing up to his effort level. But Brendan Gallagher, I think, was a little bit of a, I wouldn't say a bright spot, but, you know, he was at least out there trying to make things happen, whereas there was a couple of people, a lot more people who were kind of passengers the longer they were in California.
Fair enough. I'm going to surprise you, I think, a little bit and pick Shea Weber. He scored 2 of the 7 goals on the West Coast trip, and we have both been pretty critical of – he hasn't necessarily looked great defensively, and I thought he did not look great on Friday. No. But you know what? To whatever extent that slap shot can find the back of the net on a consistent basis, and I would say 2 goals in 3 games is good enough for me, that's a good sign for Shea Weber and a good sign for the Montreal Canadiens, who are tied to this guy for the foreseeable future.
Yeah, it's a good point. I agree. His defensive game was still left me a bit wanting, but you know, what are you gonna do? The 2 goals, it was good to see him unload the rocket on the power play. At least he still has it. I know we don't really get to see it much because teams know that that's all the Canadians want to do. And for just to quickly touch back, I mean, on the power play, it did look better in terms of the way they looked in the zone, which is a little bit promising. However, you know, we're past the point of looking good and not delivering. They need goals, but I just wanted to get that out there. But yeah, I mean, Weber, we have both been critical, and he has sort of, I mean, not, it's not like we're being critical for the sake of being critical. He kind of earned the criticism. He hadn't been playing well, and yeah, it was good to see him put the puck in the net. I mean, I think that's a bit of a weight off his shoulders. I think he'd gone a little bit of time without a goal, and like I said, it was good for the fans at least to see that he's still that cannon, can still just straight up beat a goalie. So it was good to see. But yeah, results are what they are, and it was too bad to have, you know, it was almost feels like it was wasted because, well, it was wasted because the Habs, you know, laid an egg in Anaheim and blew it in San Jose. But moving on, I mean, we can talk about the schedule coming up, sort of what the Habs have to do here. But I mean,
it's just, before we get there, I'm interested in how bad a mistake was it not to load this team up at the trade deadline, whether it's a backup goaltender, whether it's more help on the power play. Looking back, are we going to look at this as yet another trade deadline in which Marc Bergevin has stayed too cautious?
I think so. I know a lot of people won't. I mean, there's a lot of people, especially on Habs Twitter. You know, we've talked about sort of the fragmented nature of the Canadiens under Marc Bergevin in terms of the fan base. You know, I think we can talk to the PK Subban trade that kind of really fractured the fan base, and then a few other things that have happened. And, you know, there's some people who think Bergevin can do no wrong. There's some people who think, you know, they're just loyal to the Canadiens and always hope for the best, and, you know, that's admirable and it's okay. And then there's other people who, on the other end, who kind of, I think, over-criticize Marc Bergevin, you know, and it's fine, but I just think that there's people who think, and I think rightfully so to a certain extent, that this is a very positive year. Coming off what we saw last year, how we're not sure what to expect this year, it's a lot of positives. They play like we've talked about, they play quicker, they play faster, a little more skilled, they were scoring more goals, they were exciting to watch, and they were winning. And the problem is, if you're going to do a reset or a rebuild or whatever the hell you want to call it, winning is almost, I don't want to say it's the worst thing because you want to win, but if you're in the first year or the first, like this is their first, technically the first year of the reset, you know, I know it started last year, but this is the first year, you don't necessarily want to be winning as much. I mean, it sounds stupid to say, but if you want to sort of reset the team and get them younger and build through the draft and all that stuff, you know, you don't necessarily want to win this much, because now we've talked about the Canadiens are in this sort of purgatory where if they don't make the playoffs, they're picking, you know, mid to late for, well, not late, but, you know, middle in the late teens of the draft.
Okay, so this is you're anticipating my next question here. So let's go back to the beginning of the year, if you can.
Sure. Sorry.
Would you rather have had the team have a losing season and get a top 10 first round draft pick and show you flashes of what they could be, but lose more than they won? Or would you rather have a Montreal Canadiens team that inches into the playoffs and surprises their first-round opponent, makes it to the second round, but loses?
Well, it's tricky, right? Because the playoffs are always, it's always fun. I mean, I think at the beginning of the year, the first thing is what I thought was going to happen. I think we both were on that sort of page where, you know, they got to be fun, exciting, and they were going to lose more than they were going to win based on skill level, right? They were going to play teams that were just better than them, but they were going to be in games, they were going to show effort. And, you know, that game, the first game against Toronto, was sort of what I thought was going to sort of be the blueprint for their season. They would look better, they would be, you know, bigger, better efforts, you know, look good, weren't getting sort of just embarrassed every night like they were last year. But not necessarily winning, because they weren't there yet, because they're starting to build. They're not even building. They were starting to build. But then as the game series season goes on, you know, they start winning. And they're winning a lot. And, you know, they're not losing all that much. Or, you know, they're not, there's no prolonged losing streak. There's no, you know, they're looking good. And players are looking good. I mean, I don't think anyone thought Max Domi was going to come out of like a house on fire. You know, Jonathan Droy, despite the fact that he disappoints me on most nights, has looked better than last year. You know, Thomas Tatar, I think everyone was a bit surprised. Happily surprised at sort of how he fit in really quickly in Montreal. Things like that. I mean, the defense sort of, even though the defense, I mean, it still is an issue, but the fact is they were sort of able to make it work somehow. You know, even though they were, at the beginning of the year, they were kind of in all these shootouts, you know, while Carey Price was sort of finding his game. They were making it work, and the fact is, the more you start winning, then you get to this point where you want them to make the playoffs, because you think, well, who knows? I mean, they've proven they can sort of skate with the better teams, you know, despite the fact the last time they played Toronto wasn't pretty, but they show they can play with Toronto. I know that all year they've shown they can play with Boston. You know, they haven't beaten Tampa, but they show they can play with Tampa. So you know, it's you see that contrast sort of where you say, okay, these guys, you know, there's something happening here. And to go back to your first point, I think where they were at the end of February, where the trade deadline was, you have to do something. And I'm not saying get Matt Duchene, and I know there were rumors that they were in on Matt Duchene, and that's fine. And I know, you know, Bergevin like said, you know, well, they, you know, the offer, they wanted Cook and Yemi and whatever. I'm like, you know, and we talked about it last week, you know, so, or whatever. It's like, just because that's what they asked for, I mean, negotiations are a process. It's not your first, you know, you don't make one offer and then that's it. You know, you go back and forth. So it's kind of, it felt a little, you know, disingenuous, but he has shown he is too conservative when it comes to the trade deadline. And I understand you see teams that sound like, you know, you can point to last year, the Vegas Golden Knights gave up a first, a second, and a third for Thomas Tatar, who ended up being scratched. And I think when the Canadiens went and got Thomas Vanek, even though he I think he played pretty well for the most part, ended up on the fourth line and was kind of a non-factor the later the playoffs went. So I think he might be a little gun-shy to do moves like that. But this team, I didn't expect them to go for the swinging for the fences. I mean, look, if you could get Matt Duchene at a reasonable price, yeah, fine. But yeah, like Marcus Johansson would have been a nice pickup. You know, there were other guys that could, Gustav Nyquist, I think we both talked about, you know, even though San Jose got him under the cover of night. You know, there were things he could have done to help the team in certain ways, and he didn't do it. He decided to do his tried and tested, conservative
depth play.
Fourth line, depth.
Another fourth liner.
Exactly, and it was just frustrating. And to go back to your second question, it's like I said, at the beginning of the year, I wanted the first thing, but now we are where we are. I mean, if you asked me at the beginning of the year, I'd still would say the playoffs. Because if you're making the playoffs, that means they were, you know, worlds better than they were the year before. And it's kind of tricky with the way the team has gone, right? I mean, 3 years ago, they had that terrible season where Carey Price was hurt and they kind of bottomed out. And they came back and they were, I mean, you know, they won the Atlantic Division. I think we can all say it was a bit of maybe fluky, but they won the division and they bowed out in the playoffs in terrible, you know, unspectacular fashion. But then they had the down year last year. So it's kind of like, they weren't like totally trending. I mean, they were trending down, but it wasn't straight down, if you know what I mean. So the fact that, like, it wouldn't have, like, the fact that they're here doesn't necessarily surprise me because they've sort of shown they can do that in the past, even though the team is way different. But I guess, yeah, to answer your question, I would definitely take the playoffs. If they upset Tampa Bay in the first round, that would be fantastic. I mean, you know what I mean?
My problem is that they have to make a decision about what they want to do. And it seems like they want it both ways. They want to call it a rebuild to, like, rear guard any criticisms. Resell. Right. Sorry. A reset, a reframe, a re whatever, a revamp, whatever the re word you want to use. They want to do that so they can protect themselves about criticisms when they don't win. But at the same time, they want to engage in a playing style which is designed to try to eke out close wins. Now, you gotta pick one, and then orient the rest of your decisions around that unifying strategy. And so, what happened is they start winning enough games to be competitive, and we're in this situation where if they don't squeeze into the playoffs and surprise the team in the first round, I think we have to call this year a failure. And that's my third year. That's my third question for you. Looking back, if the Canadiens don't make the playoffs this year, was it a failure?
Well, failure is a difficult word to sort of put on everything. I think it'll definitely be it's the worst case scenario for what they're trying to do. And you're right in this whole, they want to have it both ways. And I think ever since Marc Bergevin was hired, that's what they've been trying to do. They've been trying to do this double thing where they want to build through the draft but also be competitive, and you can't do it. I mean, I know he took over a team that was, you know, the third overall pick, and I think, I mean, we've spoke about it a little bit. I think, you know, the fact that they did really well in that short season coming out of the second lockout in 2012 kind of set everything back, because I think they were ready to sort of do a rebuild, but because they came out and were competitive and made the playoffs and looked, you know, good, it changed the whole decision-making, I think, of the whole organization. And I know Bergevin came from Chicago, and I guess he kind of saw them do their retooling on the fly, but maybe before he got there, he didn't realize that they sucked for quite a while, and that's how they got Patrick Kane, Jonathan Toews, Duncan Keith, Brent Seabrook. You know, they got these guys. They were picking at the top of the draft. And, you know, it's really hard to sort of do that, especially in the salary cap world, and sort of maintain it. You know, you have to draft really well if you're going to be a good team picking at the end of the first round, or, you know, early, you know, however you decide. But if you're going to be picking there, you have to be really good at drafting. And the Canadiens have kind of shown that they're, especially in the first round, I mean, okay. We'll leave it at that. As for the failure, it's tough. If they miss the playoffs, I think that, like I said, it's the worst case scenario. I wouldn't say it's a failure because there still are positives to take out of this season, right? I mean, just the way they played in general is just, you know, last year, you're obviously not in the city, but I mean, last year people couldn't give away Canadiens tickets.
I saw reports.
Right. It's like, and they were playing boring, ugly defensive hockey and losing 6-1. You know what I mean? Now, at least if they're losing most nights, I mean, we saw, like I said, Friday they got blown out and they were awful. But, you know, they're playing better in terms of a modern type of game that's built on speed and skill. So that's definitely refreshing. It definitely gets you a little excited. And, you know, even if they don't make the playoffs, it's still something to sort of get excited to build about, you know, where the team might go. But I'll use the word failure. If they don't make the playoffs now, it's definitely a failure. I'll use it in terms of answering your question. Yes, I think it's a failure. Because picking where they are doesn't help them either way.
Exactly. Well, that's, you know, the point. The point. And that is what happens when you don't commit to a unifying vision of what the team is supposed to be. And look, you got to adapt on the fly. But that's why I don't understand. Because if the team is in a playoff contention, you come to the trade deadline, you have all this cap space, you have all these picks you've been acquiring, you make some moves to strengthen the team. If you don't do it, but you still hold out the possibility of the team making the playoffs, then you've essentially blown a year in which you could have got higher draft picks, could have finally got rid of this idea that slow defensive hockey is going to win anything in the modern NHL, and set yourself up for the future. And my fear is that we've done none. Okay, last question, then we'll get to the week ahead.
No problem.
Are the Montreal Canadiens going to make the playoffs this year? Oof.
You know, that's a good one. I'm going to be Johnny Optimist here. I'm going to say yes. I know if it's going to be tricky if they're still kind of on the fringes, which I think they will be kind of regardless. But if they're at the end of the month, and I'm sort of going ahead with the schedule, but they play Columbus on the 28th. If they're still battling, and that's the fifth to last game of the season, if they're still kind of on the outside looking in there, I think it's no dice. But I want to think they can do it, and I'm going to say yes, because I think also that the bubble has burst in Carolina. I think they got blown up by the Jets this weekend. And I think Carolina, despite the fact that they're a bit of a feel-good story, I think they're more, I think even more so than the Canadiens, are kind of punching above their weight. And so I think they're going to kind of regress back to the mean here for them. And I think they're going to drop out. And I think the Canadiens are going to get in more because Carolina drops out and less because they're going to be sort of, you know, they're going to win, how many games are left here? 15 or whatever? 16?
Yeah, well, they have to win more than 2 out of 3 of the remaining games. And basically,
so there's 13 games left. So I think, sorry to cut you off. So yeah, I think it's going to be more than them winning 10 out of 13. I think it's going to be Carolina's going to drop out more so than Montreal is really going to take off.
I think that's a smart call. With 13 games left, I think unless one of these bubble teams implodes, which still might happen to Carolina, Montreal's on the outside looking in. But the reality is, if it's just down to them winning 70% of their remaining games, there's no way. So it's now your hands are not in your own, your fate is not in your own hands, and that is not a great place to be in. So we got a tough, I mean, let's talk about it. Look, we got Detroit tomorrow night, the Islanders on Thursday, Chicago at home, Philly, the next week on Tuesday. The Islanders again on Thursday. Buffalo at home. Then our last four-game week of the season. Carolina on Sunday. Florida on Tuesday. Columbus on Thursday. Winnipeg on Saturday at their barn. And then the last week of the season, Tampa Bay, Washington, Toronto. That is not a great way to end your season.
No, that's what I mean. So the Canadians have to make their moves in the next seven games here.
Agree. I totally agree with that.
So it's, you know, starting off with the week coming, I mean, they're playing Detroit, which, you know, they've kind of dominated this year. You know, and they should be able to sort of hope, you think they'd be able to keep it going. I mean, was it they've.
I don't need another blowout, though. I just need, I don't care if it's a 3-1 win. I'll take whatever.
Again, Detroit has sort of been the Canadiens' get-right team this year, so I think it's good timing after the way they played Anaheim. I think if they struggle in that game, I think that's a really bad sign. They might struggle and win, but if they struggle against the Red Wings, I think it's will be the sign that, okay, this team is just, they've either hit their wall or they're done, and then we'll see what happens. But I think, I mean, this is a very winnable week for the Canadiens. But I think they should definitely take care of business against Detroit. To your point, it doesn't have to be 6-0. I think if 3-1, 4-1, just sort of like, you know, we like to say a professional win, just sort of take care of them and then, you know, take care of a team you should beat and keep going, you know, move on to the next game. That's what should happen. But I would be very concerned for the rest of the year if they eke out like a 2-1 win or, you know, if they look like they're getting dominated at all, I would be concerned. But that's just how I see it. I mean, Detroit, I mean, do you have an opinion?
They're going to win the game against Detroit. It's definitely, you know, they're playing at home after a shit week on the road. They're going to win. They got the Islanders on Thursday. I have mixed feelings about that. I'd like to see them get a point. But, you know, if they can beat the Islanders and then roll into Chicago on Saturday.
Chicago.
Right. Sorry. Yes. Have a welcome Chicago to Montreal on Saturday. People will be feeling really good about where their chances are. And then, as you said, Philly the next week and then the Islanders again and then Buffalo and then Carolina and then Florida. Those, I'm not saying they are must wins, but if you're saying that they need to win 70% of their remaining games, they cannot lose more than one of those games, I don't think. So
yeah, I just think the bigger fact in all that is for the Canadians, you cannot go to the last, if you want to include the Columbus game, you can't go to your last five games of the season. You know, Columbus, Winnipeg, Tampa, Washington, Toronto, those are the games. You can't go in there needing, you know,
3 out of 5.
You might need to pull, but those are the games, like, you can't go in there saying, okay, we need to sweep these five games.
No.
It's unrealistic.
Now that's just for the sake of the, you know, other side-ism. Those teams are secure in the playoffs. You could imagine them resting some players and maybe taking it a little bit easy in that last week as they gear up for the playoffs.
I would say Tampa's probably, because they're comfortable, like they're already clinched.
Yeah.
But, I mean, other teams will probably be still jockeying for position. So, I mean,
There's not going to be any gimmies, but I'm just saying that, like, it's not impossible that they eke out, lose, but eke out a point. And I think but to your point, if you're going into the final five games of the season, holding on to a spot with your fingernails, you're probably not making it. So the next seven games are absolutely essential. The next 2 weeks, and we will know a lot more when we chat next week about whether there is even a chance of the Canadiens being able to eke their way in.
Yeah, I think, this week the Canadiens need at least five. If they get anything less than five, I know four sounds, it would still be an all right week, but I think they need five. They can't afford, you know, if they lose a game, they need to lose it in overtime. They cannot afford to not gather points now. If this is the situation they're in, then this is, you know, the playoffs, it has to be their goal now, and you need to collect points. And I think this is a week they can do it. I think they've only played the Islanders once this year. So
it'll be interesting to see that matchup, because they have them twice in 2 weeks.
Yeah. So Yeah, it'll be fun. I mean, it's we're gonna say this every week now, but this is now the most important week of the Canadiens season. So it'll be interesting to see how they come out. They, you know, I think they need to come out big, and I think they need to get points. You know, and I think despite the fact the Islanders have been playing pretty good, I think lately they've been slipping. I think they slipped out of first place here. You know, I think they're also kind of slipping back to what people thought, even though I think they're definitely making the playoffs. But, you know, don't be surprised if by the end of the year the Islanders have slipped down into the wild card. You know, it's just one of those crazy things. But the Canadiens need to take advantage of what the next couple of weeks of their schedule, because it does get brutal. The next couple of weeks should be manageable for them.
And that's up and down the lineup. I mean, that starts from the goaltender out. There's just absolutely. And let's stop the whole sitting Kokkonen-Yemi thing, and let's stop the whole. I mean, we need Kulak. We need our best players at the best positions. And if you ask me right now, I would take Wheel over Thompson on the fourth line. And look, let's get back to what got team to where they are.
I would take Wheel over Weiss. I mean, I know they're both centers, but Wheel and Thompson, but I'd rather have two guys who can take draws on the fourth line, or an extra guy who can take faceoffs and has a bit more speed than Dale Weiss, who, you know, like we've talked about, has a bit of a good reputation in Montreal, but I mean, he's clearly not the player he used to be.
Well, fair enough, but I mean, we've got some guys in the press box right now that, you know, where's Pekka? Where's Hudon? Delorier, it's fine with me if he's sitting, but, you know.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, I don't understand. Like, I'm not. We were talking about the lineup stuff, like, hey, Dale Weiss, I know he's been up and down and in and out, but it seems like since he's been called back up from Laval, or he sat a game, I can't remember, but he's been like a mainstay. Like, how, I don't understand why Dale Weiss is sort of this like untouchable guy on the fourth line. I find it interesting.
I really thought that Weiss pickup was to give you depth if you made the playoffs.
Be the one, and I don't mean this to back, because, you know, I'm not. But Dale Weiss should be the one sitting in the press box, and if we need him to come in, comes in. Not he's the guy who's in the lineup, and if, you know, if he gets hurt, then he gets replaced. I mean,
but that's what I'm saying. Are you investing in your young players, or are you trying to eke a win out with your old, experienced fourth line? And to my mind, if you say you're trying to revamp or retool this team, you want your young players and you want them to skate as fast as they can. So I don't – it's just, again, like, what is the vision for this team, and how does that vision fit into decisions that are made on a night-to-night basis?
Yeah, that's a good question. And since the beginning of the Marc Bergevin era, it's kind of been this sort of duplicitous. I mean, not that it's that. I mean, it's not like it's a big scheme, but it's been these two. You mentioned it. They haven't picked a lane. They wanted to do two things at the same time, and it's led them to mediocrity. And now we're sort of seeing this come to fruition with this year, where there are a lot of these positives, but they're on the edge, and it's frustrating because they haven't been able to make a decision on how they want to build the team.
Two options for the podcast title. Mistakes were made. I still am partial to that one. And then the other one is pick a lane. We got some options, right? It's good. It's good to have options.
Yeah, that's, you need options in life, right?
Ask Bergevin. Ideally on the fourth line.
Can never have too many options on the fourth line or as your sixth defenseman.
So a big week coming up, Connor. Yes. I will. I actually have a hockey game on Tuesday night. I'll be listening in the car on the way home. But I'm making plans for Thursday and Saturday to be in front of the tube, maybe on the Twitter machine, firing off some hot takes and hopefully watching this team figure out the direction it's going.
Yeah, I'd say, we talked about it. They need to come out with a big performance this week if they want to stay in the legitimate playoff conversation, because, it's they're at this point, it's do or die now. And, you know, it's despite the fact they've done a lot of good things, they need to keep doing it and get over the hump here, get over the finish line.
Go big or go home.
That's right. Although, you know, their GM doesn't believe in that, so it's hard for the team to. Anyway.
All right.
For the last one on Habs podcast, I'm Connor LaPalme signing off.
Good to.
I hope you have a good week. Enjoy all your hockey playing and your general, whatever you're doing now that I think you're off this week.
Spring break week, 5 games of hockey in the next 7 days. In the High Cup, you can only score 1 goal per game. So I will be scoring my goal early and just setting everybody up.
I was going to say you should make it count, but you do what you do. And good luck in all your hockey. And hopefully we have a lot more positive things to talk about next week after the Canadiens week.
Exactly. And this week, I'm going to try and keep my stick on the ice.
Attaboy. All right. Take care.
Bye.
This has been the Last Word on Habs podcast, brought to you by the Last Word on Sports Network. Join us next week. Until then, see you on the ice.